Welcome to Season 3 of The Broken Banquet. Ashley's settled in Houston. I'm still in Costa Rica. But we're both really excited about bringing you more conversations about missions. We hope you'll enjoy this episode. How are you, Ashley?
Hey, Will. I'm good. It's good to see you today.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be home. I was gone for about a week and a half, and that's about as long as I can stand to be away from home these days.
Well, I tell you, one of the best parts of you being away, though, was a six-hour layover in the Houston airport, and I got to lay eyes on you and hug you.
You know, I usually am not thrilled to have an itinerary that includes a six-hour layover anywhere. But now that you are in Houston, it makes that a little bit more appealing. So, yes, thank you for taking me to lunch in Humble, Texas. It was good. It was a good break. It was good to see you. You're right. It's been a while. So, yeah, that was awesome. And it was good. I went to a missions conference for a week with basically kind of all of the leaders of missions the mission organizations for the United Methodist Church right now, and just kind of have everybody in the same room. There were about 100 people there, and talked about, moving forward and what that looks like for these different organizations and how we can work together better and all that stuff. So that was good. And then I went and spent 4 days with one of our partner churches in Kansas, Church of the Resurrection, and got to see lots of folks that have already been here, lots of folks that are excited about coming. I got to be a part of they commissioned a team from that church that is coming here Saturday. And so they commissioned them Sunday night, and I got to be there. It's the first time in 22 years I've actually been with one of our volunteer teams as they were being commissioned to come to Costa Rica. So that was cool. It was cool. So it was a good trip, but glad to be home.
And you said you ran into one of our previous guests, Willie Berman.
I did. We were on a panel together at the missions conference, and Willie stole the show. You couldn't tell in our interview, but Willie is hilarious. I mean, it was literally like, we each had, 8 or 10 minutes to talk. And thank goodness I went first, because it was like I was followed by a stand-up comic who I felt really bad for the lady who went after him, because he just had everybody rolling with laughter. It was fun to see him. It was fun to see him, and he sent you his regards. And good stuff.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, I'm really excited about the guest we have on today's podcast. That was like a seamless transition. Did you see that?
Beautiful.
It was such a beautiful transition, but I'm excited to introduce you to our guest today. He is the current president of Arab Baptist Theological Seminary, and I was able to meet with him in person for the first time while we were in Albania. We had a lovely breakfast together. We had a meal. It was great. And so I consider him a giant in theological education. I think one of the things I've told you before, Will, is how this church, the Woodlands Methodist Church, has had a long history of mission partnership with theological education across the world, with a mindset of if we can invest into leaders being trained in their own context, culture, and language, they have the ability to go even further than ever before. But I believe that Arab Baptist Theological School may be one of our longest standing partnerships here at the Woodlands. And so it's been lovely to get to know him. So Will, meet my friend, Eli Haddad.
Hello, Eli. Welcome to The Broken Banquet.
Hello, Will. Thank you, Ashley. I'm not a giant, except maybe in my physique, but thank you for your introduction.
He is rather tall.
And a bit overweight.
Well, Eli, just so you know, too, Will is he serves in Costa Rica with his wife, Yolanda, and daughter, Isabella, and they have a ministry called Acts 1-8 Missions. He and I have traveled together over the Middle East a couple of times, and we both have a heart for the Middle East and have not made it to Lebanon yet, but it's definitely on our list.
Great.
I'd love for you just to take a few minutes to share a little bit about your background, like where you grew up and what shaped your call into theological education.
All right. So I was born and raised in Lebanon, and I grew up during the Civil War. So I was born into a Bible-believing family. So I got introduced to the faith very early on. But then during the Civil War, I went to the U.S. And studied a bit. I was in the D.C. area and then came back to Lebanon. At that time, I had really strayed away from God. And that lasted for about 12 years. So I did work. I was in the IT business. I was in programming early in my career. And then at one point in time, I emigrated to Canada, and that's when I became serious about my faith and my ministry, and lived in Canada 15 years. That's where I met my Lebanese wife. She had also emigrated during the Civil War to Canada. So I was an IT and management consulting at the time, but both of us were very involved in our local church ministry, which was an Arabic-speaking Baptist church in the Toronto area. And at one point in time, I felt God calling me to get better equipped. So I did seminary degree while I was working. And at the end of that, got the invitation to come back to Lebanon, which was a very difficult time of discernment for us, because it's leaving the place that had become home for us and going back to the place that we ran away from. And that was a very difficult thing to do. But God made it very clear that that was what he was calling us to do. So we came back, and it's after coming back that God really gave us a new, renewed vision for the region, for the people. And it's been the most amazing journey ever. So we've been back 20 years, serving and leading the Arab Baptist Theological Seminary from Beirut, Lebanon. And my ministry with ABTS will conclude in 17 days, 2 hours, 23 seconds. I'll be gone.
But who's counting, right?
Oh, I was just getting ready to say, but who's counting? And we'll get to that in maybe just a second, too, because I would love to talk through that. But looking back, can you think of what has been maybe the most rewarding part of leading a seminary in the Middle East?
So God has given me a passion to see people grow in their faith and their ministry. Mm-hmm. And being able to see that and witness the fruit of our ministry is something just amazing. Just a word about Lebanon. Lebanon is still a very strategic gateway for ministry to the Arab world. We're the only Arab non-Muslim countries where religious freedom is guaranteed by our constitution. So we get to do stuff that cannot happen elsewhere in the Arab world. People can convert in Lebanon from one religion to another while apostasy is criminalized in the rest of the Arab world. So the ministry of ABKS is not just for Lebanese, it's for the entire Arab world, Middle East, North Africa. So coming alongside the growing church and the Arab world is just so exciting. Graduation is usually a highlight of the year. So that's going to happen in a couple of weeks. It's one day before I leave. Just seeing the fruit of the ministry and then going, traveling and visiting our graduates and seeing them in ministry, in their own context, and the impact that they're making for God and for the kingdom and the region, despite the high cost for most of them. It's just incredible to see something this precious to God's heart and be invited to come alongside and play a small part in that. I couldn't dream of just doing anything else.
I'd have a question that I'd like to ask, and it's kind of personally motivated. But Eli, two of the most interesting books that I've read in the last few years have been Kenneth Bailey's Jesus Through Middle Eastern Eyes, and then Randolph Richards and Brandon O'Brien's Misreading Scripture with Western Eyes. And I'm kind of ashamed to say how blown away I was by these two books. I just never really given much thought to how different scriptural interpretation might be when the same stories are read by people who are actually in and have always been in the context where those stories actually happened. And I'm wondering if you could, do you feel like that's an accurate assessment of what they're trying to say? Are there things that you have seen, because you've been experienced now to theological education and to church in the East and the West, are there things that jump out of you that kind of make you go, oh no, but that's not what that means? Have you encountered that kind of situation?
Absolutely. Well, I think the bottom line in all of that is context matters. And this is a big thing that many people don't understand or don't get. We tend to think that theology coming out of the West is theology proper, and theology but coming from the rest of the world is contextual theology. Well, even theology that's coming out of the West is understood in a certain context, and our interpretation is based on a certain context. That's why back in 2009, we really redesigned our curriculum from scratch to create something that's very contextual. So it was, our curriculum was very much like curricula and seminaries in other places. It was as if we were training the leaders of tomorrow to answer the questions of yesterday in a totally different context. So context matters, to your point, Will. And the way we deliver our training, even within our diverse context within the Middle East, North Africa, anything that we teach in our classroom that's highly prescriptive in Beirut will not be relevant for others in Egypt and Upper Cairo and Morocco and Tunisia and Iraq. So that's why teaching our students and helping them develop into critical thinkers, those who are able to engage scripture, they're able to engage their context, they're able to engage their own selves and ministry, and engage with the rest of theological disciplines and history and everything that God's been revealing to his church in the last 2,000 years. And you can see how their ability to learn something and they become experts at contextualizing it for their own context. And when we redesigned our curriculum, we switched our from teaching to learning. So our classroom became more about learning. So it's not about the professor lecturing. It's about helping the students bring their own context into the classroom for discussion. Things like that can take place through helping students create their own case studies that we deal with in the classroom. So what it becomes very rich, because we're able to understand cross-culturally how we deal with issues and how we look at scripture in light of our challenges and how we resolve and how we help shepherd and disciple people.
Yeah. And that was going to be one of my questions too, was that how have you adapted over the years, curriculum, delivery methods, partnerships, how... There's so many different needs, different realities of ministry today. Like, so how have you adapted to that over time?
Yeah. So we've adapted a lot. One of the benefits of ABTS is that we're small enough that we can steer quickly. For larger seminaries where they have hundreds and thousands of students, you can just drop a program and create a new one overnight. At ABTS, we were able to become a place of innovation, trying new ideas, a new philosophy of education, basically, where we want to be that place of learning, created a curriculum that's holistic, highly integrated, contextual, built for ministry in an Arab Muslim world. So we've learned a lot, and interruptions happen a lot, disruptions happen a lot in our region. The pandemic back in 2020 was an international, global disruption. Well, for us, it was one layer of many layers of crises at the time. It wasn't our top crisis at the time. So we learned to be very flexible to be able to be resourceful, to be able to chart new territories and try new things and shift and adjust and learn. And that's why being innovative has become a very important part of the DNA of ABTS. Otherwise, we couldn't survive, let alone thrive, and in a place that we're stability is not part of our life. So it's full of disruption. We need to be able to respond to the changing realities around us very quickly.
Keep going, Ashley. You, there were like five things that you said that you were going to ask before we started.
No. I liked those books that you were talking about too. So I felt like you had a follow up, and I just cut you off.
No, I lament the fact that there's not more room in the West, in the theological conversations that happen at a high level and on a local level. There's not more room for voices from the East who I just think have so much to offer.
Little by little, I think there is awareness that God is at work all over the world, and we need to learn from one another and from our experiences. And we're starting to hear more and more about polycentric mission. It's from everywhere to everywhere. Things are changing. It takes time. There's no doubt that very high quality material comes out of the West. But it's true as well that there's growing number of high quality material coming out of Africa, out of Asia, out of Latin America. So things are changing for sure.
Yeah, that's encouraging. Good.
That was something I never realized either, too, like since coming into this position of going to Langham Partnership and going to the Langham Publishing House at the ISET meeting, hearing polycentric for the first time. I'd never heard that phrase in regard to missions. Would you like to explain a little bit what polycentric mission means? I know you gave a very short that was perfect, that everywhere to everyone.
So we're used to mission being from the West to the rest of the world or from the North to the South. Polycentric is multiple centers. So there'll be multiple centers of mission sending, if you want. So it's to oversimplify it. So why not Indians going to the UK and carrying on mission? Why not Africans going to the US and Canada and doing mission? So it's about cross-learning from one another globally, all over the world. We have different experiences that we need to learn from. God is at work in all these contexts. Basically, multiple centers. That's how I understand it.
Yeah. Okay.
Decentralized mission.
So we've talked to several people over the course of the last 2.5 seasons of this podcast who are involved in ministry in the Middle East. Some even in places where they couldn't specifically say out loud where they were involved because there's danger. If that's not the case in Lebanon, could you kind of explain a little bit of what is church life for a normal Christian family in Lebanon, just to sort of see the contrast between the situation that you are in compared to some of the others that we've spoken to previously?
So as I was saying, in Lebanon, we have a high degree of religious freedom. We're able to evangelize, proselytize, whatever you want to call it. Conversion is allowed. So there is no formal persecution. There can be community persecution. There can be family persecution. But there is no formal persecution. There is that kind of freedom. And that gives us the ability to do so many things. And that's why we feel a big responsibility as a church in Lebanon to work with the churches in the rest of the Arab world in terms of coming alongside and strengthening, supporting, and sometimes hosting those that have to flee for one reason or another. So ministry in Lebanon is by far different than what church life will look like in the rest of the Arab world. Mm-hmm. There are countries where you feel that Christians are able to worship freely, and that's correct. But the ability for someone to become Christian is not there. So,
I'm thinking about this most recent turmoil that's been happening in that region, and how ABTS has pivoted their educational methods to continue equipping leaders and pastors. Could you talk about how things have changed in the past couple of years there at your campus?
So that's the big change, the pivoting happened 5 years ago during the pandemic, where we suddenly had to close the classroom and send our students home and then shift to online and hybrid. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, God had been preparing us since 2015 when we launched the Certificate of Ministry fully online program. So we had the platform, we had the infrastructure, we had some experience, some expertise. So we had that. And we knew that it would be amazing if we had our programs available to people that cannot leave their ministry to come to Lebanon for 3 years. But maybe we didn't have the courage to do that switch. It took God, the pandemic, to help us make that big change. And it was a huge change for us. Because in our curriculum, formation is something very important to us. And we know how to do the formative elements on campus as students come and they live with us and we build community together. So how do you relinquish that and start doing it from a distance? So we had the grieving process when we had to close the classroom. But it was a journey of discovery, discovering new ways of doing theological education and leadership formation. And the outcome of that is amazing. We lost something, but we gained a lot more. Now we're able to work with key leaders who wouldn't be able to leave their ministry to come to Lebanon for 3 years. And we stretch our program to 5 years. So anyone who's able to set aside 15 hours a week to be trained, we can work with that. So now we are able to work with key leaders. They have responsibilities in terms of caring for their congregations, but they haven't been equipped. They haven't been trained. So now we can come alongside them. And we're discovering new ways of doing that formation. We need to recognize that formation is a shared responsibility between the seminary and the local church, and then learning how to do that effectively. And we're still learning. We're 5 years into the program, we're still learning. There's so much that has changed, but it's been an amazing journey. Yeah. And our enrollment has more than doubled and growing very quickly. It has increased accessibility to our program, to new communities that we never thought possible. So it has been an amazing change for us.
And I seem to remember, too, that you started using some of the buildings on your campus more creatively for other local mission-y type purposes. Am I remembering that correctly?
So we're part of a family of ministries under the same ownership, same umbrella. So our campus is always active. We have things happening on our campus. Mm-hmm. Because we don't have students living on campus full-time, what has been happening is that during times of crises, we open up the space that we have to host displaced people during the war, during the pandemic, during any crisis that we get. Right away, we open up our facilities and start caring for people. So God uses us differently in different seasons. And that's one of the lessons that we learn in terms of adjusting to the disruptions, is that we shouldn't hold on too tightly to what we think we should be doing. We're God's agent in this region. Today we're doing theological education. Tomorrow we could be hosting displaced people. The day after tomorrow we're dealing with other things that God puts in front of us. So it's the ability to be that, to have that kind of flexibility.
Yeah. And I think that was what tugged at my heart so much from when we had that conversation in Albania, was hearing how you were so open and willing to be used by God for whatever purpose he had the school and yourself in that leadership position, whatever he had in front of you, and how easily maybe easy is not the right word, but how easily you transitioned to that because you simply wanted to be obedient and be a service and a witness for those in the community around you and how you could best serve them. And I brought that back to being here at this church with the buildings and the and so much, and how hard of a decision that would be to make, to open your doors to, and maybe not during a disaster, but during other times, of how hard it is for us to open our doors and to invite people in, because we have to think of, that's a bigger air conditioning bill, that's a bigger food bill, what are we going to do? So it was a beautiful reminder that we're called to serve where we are. Yeah.
So we've been learning amazing lessons in the last 20 years that I've been here. That's why after I conclude my time with ABTS, one of my main projects will be a book project. And we want to be able to document all the lessons that we've learned in leadership, in doing ministry, and these times of disorientation. So it'll be amazing to capture what God has been doing in us and through us during these years. So I'm looking forward to reflecting on all these years of God's work and at ABTS.
Ashley, I've asked you this question before, and I'll do it again. But if someone is listening today to the Broken Banquet for the very first time, would you explain? You mentioned already that Woodlands is a big supporter of theological education around the world, but would you talk a little bit more about what that relationship between your church and this ministry, what that relationship involves? Can
you? Right. Yeah, it's hard to quantify and put into words. I'm still working on or trying to figure that out. What are the intricacies of those relationships and how we can best support those who we've agreed to be in partnership with? It's such an interesting relationship between a church and a seminary. And I'm trying to personalize it by getting to know Ali, getting to know Riyadh, getting to know Lula, and getting to know them just on a personal basis so that we can be together, be partners in ministry, and just have a friendship, a faithful friendship. For other schools, and I don't believe that this happened with ABTS, but correct me if I'm wrong, Ellie, you would know better than me. But for many of our church, they've gone over to several of the seminaries that we support to help them specifically with libraries, that they've seen that as a very tangible way that they can serve is by setting up a 40,000 book library, cataloging it, and making it so that the seminary can be accredited, because that's one of the big accrediting features. And so we just had a team that came back from Ukraine last week. In Kyiv. And so that's what it looks like. We work mainly through a couple of organizations that used to be called Overseas Council and United World Mission, and that two of those merged to become Mesa Global. And they're that umbrella that we support and go through as far as theological education. And they're a lot more hands-on than I think that probably we are, but it's one of my goals is to figure this out, Will, of how do we come into an abiding relationship with Eli? How do we come into an abiding relationship with his successor, with the school seminary presidents or leaders, so that we can be just faithful friends as part of the ministry.
Thank you. Ashley, you've supported ABTS for a long time through OCI and Mesa Global. But with you, this is the first time that we have a face to the relationship. And that elevates that kind of partnership to a different level. One of the things that we've been working on very heavily at ABTS is to develop theology of partnership and to try to move our relationships from transactional partnerships to more formative partnerships. So having that personal connection is amazing for us, is an answer to prayer. And we'd love to continuously investigate and explore how we can deepen this partnership and how your church can feel that they are on mission with us as we are coming alongside the church in the Arab world.
Amen.
Just said all the right words.
In the right order?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I mean, that's what we've been spending the last 2.5 years talking about is how to get away from transactional missions into more relational, well, relationships, which obviously is redundant. But what you just said, I mean, that's, and it's a challenge for a lot of churches on the sending end who have been doing something in a certain way and understanding it a certain way for a very long time to get people to rethink what is valuable about those relationships, what is helpful, what is not helpful. You know, I'm sure the last thing that you need is a whole bunch of people coming to try and tell you how to teach theology to the people that you're teaching to. You don't need that help. But that doesn't mean there aren't things that through a healthy relationship, people can help with, support the ministry, the work that you're doing. But you have to be in a relationship where people can tell the truth before you can really get to that place. And people can hear the truth before you can get to that place. And so if you don't know the people you're talking to, how much truth telling is really going to happen? And so that's wonderful that I'm glad to hear from you. You know, if we were having this conversation without Ashley being present, you just said the things that I would want to hear from one of the partners that Ashley is pouring into, is that they feel like there is a personal connection with this church.
Well, this is the way I look at it, is that if together we are engaged in Missio Dei, we're engaged in the mission of God, then how can we not be transformed by this mission? Something needs to change. Something needs to happen. It's not just about writing checks and sending over. Mm-hmm. It's much deeper than that. We cheapen the work of missions when we just do it at a transactional level. So this is something very important for us, figuring out a way to deepen the relationship that all of us are being transformed through the experience.
And one of my big goals is to actually get there. I want to come to Beirut. I would love to come and be with. And my goal was to get there before you retired. However, I don't think that's going to happen. When Riyadh sent me the invitation for your retirement party on September, 28th? It broke my heart because I know I have to preach the next day or the day of. And so I know that I can't just pop on a plane and get over there and come back. But
yeah, Ashley, we have a problem. The list of places that I need for you to take me to is growing drastically. And I'm not sure how we're going to handle that. I'm not sure how you
can handle that. Yeah, I think the big thing is that we wanted to do this little Middle East tour because that's where a lot of our interviews here as of late have happened. And so if we hit Beirut and then if we hit Cairo and then if we hit Istanbul, I think if we get those three, we could probably hit on, we could probably get several folks.
I just want to tell you that I'm not retiring. So,
all right, good.
I live 2 minutes from ABTS. Just a new season. And we're doing this because we believe in the value of succession planning. Theologically, we've done some reflection on that. But I will continue, as far as I can see, I will continue to be involved in theological education, leadership formation, missional leadership, organizational development for ministries in the region. So our paths will cross somehow, maybe. They will with Metta Global and other organizations that support theological education. So we're still serving the same space somehow.
Yeah.
So will you tell us about your theology of succession? Because we've had a lot of conversations with people about how they got into ministry. We haven't had a whole lot of, and I know you just said you're not retiring, but even moving into a different phase or stage of ministry, but being mindful of who's coming in behind you. And you say you've been mindful of approaching that theologically. Can you tell us about that? It might be helpful for people to hear.
I wrote a blog post about that. So we have a blog at ABTS, so I can point you to that.
Great.
If I can summarize it in three words, leadership is not ownership, it's stewardship. So when I am called to lead ABTS, it doesn't become mine. And I stay here until, because this is where I get my fulfillment and my identity and everything else. No, it's about stewardship. And I need to be faithful to not just what happens while I'm here, but to what happens after I leave as well. And there are so many examples from scripture. But I started at ABTS. I took after someone who's very wise, and his advice to me was, from your first day on the job, start thinking about succession. And that has helped me a lot in my own thinking. It didn't take 20 years to get to that point. Like, it's succession is not just about choosing my successor. It's about elevating the whole system. It's about building the right processes, the right team environment, the right discernment environment. And this is what has happened at ABKS. We have an amazing leadership team who is very empowered and capable of running ABTS even without a president, so that succession becomes it becomes easy, and not just for the top position, for academic dean, for whatever. And this is something important in a place like Lebanon. Like, even for our faculty, if a seminary in the U.S. needs a faculty member, they will advertise an opening, and they'll get 20, 30 applications, and they'll choose from those. In Lebanon, if we anticipate in 10 years that we will have a gap in New Testament, we have to start working on it today. So we have to identify people that we want to invest in for the next 10 years so that they are. So succession planning in our part of the world is about elevating the whole system. It's about investing in everyone who has potential and getting to the point where, okay, now it's your turn. And for my next season, I don't need to be sitting at the desk signing checks and making those decisions. I want to be a place where I'm coming alongside younger leaders who are sitting at the desk. And what's the point of leadership formation if we say we're developing younger leaders and then we don't give them opportunities to lead? Then what's the point? So seeing someone come after me and do a better job than me would be the highlight of my career.
Is that outlook or perspective, is that something that, is there a cultural element to that from where you are? You see that reflected in other parts of Lebanese culture?
No.
With leadership development, or it's unique to the church or the seminary?
No, it's very unique to ABTS. And everything that we do at ABTS is very countercultural, because we do things intentionally based on values and based on convictions. And our hope is that what we do at ABTS becomes sort of a paradigm for others to follow, a model, because it's important that to affect change. I think we need to teach and we need to model. Both are important. We can teach whatever we want, but if they don't see actual examples, life examples of that, and people don't learn. So we have this issue of succession in our churches, in our ministries. And people stay in their role until they're carried out, basically, or until they emigrate. So there must be something more intentional than that, mm-hmm. how we do that. And so I get many questions, and why are you leaving? And you're still young, and you still have a few years in front of you. What happened? What went wrong? You know, we don't wait until something goes wrong before we plan the next step and transition. Succession is going to happen, whether we plan for it or not. So we ought to plan for it.
That's so refreshing. That's a very, very refreshing message to hear, Eli. I do love your blog posts. Here are the four things that Eli pointed out in his blog post. Well, God is the true leader. Leadership is for a season. Succession must be intentional, and transitions require trust.
That's true, ma.
Yeah, no, I'll put that in the show notes so that people can read it, because it's a lovely article.
And it's not personally, it's one of the hardest decisions that I've ever made, leaving ABTS. It's not like I'm doing this for personal benefit. No, it's just out of conviction. This is what we believe, the right thing to do, and we move on, trusting God for the next season.
My last question was going to be this. If you could leave our listeners with just one encouragement about the future of the church in the Middle East, what would that be?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The church is changing a lot in the last few years. it's as if this is God's timing for that award. And God is drawing people to himself from so many new communities and new backgrounds. And so it's very exciting times. And this is the thing is when things get darker, it's where our light should shine the brightest type of thing. So this has become our motto. Don't waste a good crisis. Every crisis opens up so many new opportunities for the gospel. It's so important for the church to engage in what's happening in our world, and so important for us to come alongside the church in developing leaders who are able to read the signs of the times, who are able to understand what God's doing and able to mobilize their church communities to respond appropriately. So it's exciting. What's happening in Lebanon and the region and the level of the church is very exciting. And if we had time to talk about how we've seen our churches transformed through the crises in Lebanon in the last 10, 15 years, there's just so much to say about that. So my message to you guys, our friends and partners in the West, is when you hear how difficult it is in our region, don't feel pity for us. But be thankful and grateful that God is leaving a witness, and that witness is growing and becoming more courageous and more bold and proclaiming the gospel in so many ways, and learning what that gospel is and how it can be proclaimed in integral mission and in word and deed and making big impact. The more our region is volatile, the more we have conflicts, we have hatred, we have wars, the more we need to be these agents of hope and God's love in a way that's not just meaningful, not meaningless words, but that have content, that have people that are actually living with that witness and the community. So I'm very passionate about what God's preparing for the region. Politically, it may be very grim, but church-wise, what God is doing, every crisis is really shaking the communities and shaking the church, and something beautiful is coming out of that. And God is doing what he does best, taking a bad situation, redeeming it, and life comes out of it in beautiful ways. And we are in the middle of that, so it's so exciting to witness all of that.
Amen. Well, thank you for, it is fascinating and such important work that you're doing. And thank you for your faithfulness, but also for sharing some of your story with us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for the gift of your time, and give my love to Riyadh, to Lula, and just tell everybody I said hello to your family. It will be good to see them in person soon.
We'll do that. Make sure you bring Will with you.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right.
Well, Ashley?
Will?
Thank you again for introducing me to another wonderful, faithful servant. Not sure how I'm going to find a way to take enough time off to go and visit all of these people, but thank you anyway.
Of course. You've been listening to The Broken Banquet, a podcast by Will Bailey and Ashley Goad. Music provided by Irene and the Sleepers. Join us next week for another episode. He's prepared the table. All things are ready. Come to the feast.